Ladies and gentlemen, Chairman and CEO John Bryant.
Okay, well, good afternoon, everybody. So it's my privilege to call to order the 95th Annual Shareowners Meeting of the Kellogg Company. Let's get down to business. As a reminder, our order of business will follow today's agenda. As usual, we will also have time for questions and answers later in the meeting. Please hold your questions until the beginning of our Q&A session. If you've not yet received the agenda or rules of procedure for the meeting, please raise your hand and they will be delivered to you. We have a full agenda today: the election of four directors, approval of an advisory resolution for executive compensation, approval of an advisory resolution on the frequency of holding an advisory vote on executive compensation, the ratification of the appointment of the company's independent auditors, approval of the Kellogg Company 2017 long-term incentive plan, and a share owner proposal. As the company's bylaws provide, I will act as chairman of this meeting. Seated at the table on the platform is Gary Pilnick, our vice chairman, corporate development, and chief legal officer, who will act as secretary of this meeting. The board of directors has appointed a representative of Carl Hagberg and Associates to act as independent judge of election. The customary oath of office has been taken and signed, and we filed with the records of the meeting. His function is to decide upon the qualifications of voters, accept the votes, and tally the ballots cast. Also present today are representatives for PricewaterhouseCoopers, our company's auditors. After the meeting, they will be available to answer any questions you may have. I'd like to introduce the company's directors and nominees attending today's meeting. As your name is called, please stand, and then please hold your applause until all directors have been introduced. Nominees for directors to stand for re-election at today's meeting are Stephanie Burns, Richard Dreiling, Lejeune Montgomery-Tabron, and myself. Directors with us today whose terms do not expire this year and are continuing in office are John Dillon, Zach Gund, Jim Jeness, Don Knaus, Mary Lashinger, Cynthia Milligan, Carolyn Testard, and Noel Wallace. During 2016, our board of directors held 7 meetings. Each of the incumbent directors attended at least 75% of the total number of board meetings and board committee meetings on which the directors served. Please, a round of applause for the directors and the great service they provide our company. In addition to recognizing all of our directors, I'd especially like to thank Rogelio Rogelio. Rogelio has served as a director of our company since July of 2008 and is retiring this month. Before joining the Kellogg board, Rogelio retired in 2004 as the president and chief executive officer of Frito-Lay International. He spent 27 years with the PepsiCo organization, of which Frito-Lay is an important part. During his distinguished career, he was instrumental in expanding the company's presence in Latin America, Asia Pacific, Europe, the Middle East, and South Africa. After his retirement from Frito-Lay, Rogelio served as chief executive officer and chairman of the PepsiCo Bottling Group in Mexico from 2004 to mid-2007. He also currently serves on the board of directors of Clorox Company. He did serve on the board of directors of Clorox Company and Jose Cuervo International. When you combine Rogelio's deep understanding of the snacking category with his extensive knowledge of emerging markets, you begin to understand what tremendous insight and experience he's provided to our company. His expertise perfectly aligned with our business strategy. He's been an inspiration to all of us, pushing us to create our future and not to rest on our laurels or on our past. This includes our continued expansion to emerging markets, even twice traveling to Brazil as we look to acquire Parati, a leading biscuit, pasta, and powdered beverage company that we acquired at the end of last year. I know I and our entire leadership team benefited greatly from Rogelio's service to Kellogg. Wish he and his wife a long and happy retirement. Please join me in a big round of applause to show our thanks for Rogelio. As we say goodbye to Rahelia, we'd also like to introduce you to Rick Dreiling, the newest member of our company's board of directors who was appointed last June. Rick brings a long and successful career in numerous retail environments to our company. In fact, he's been a long-standing partner to us, selling Kellogg's products for more than 3 decades. And so he knows our products portfolio quite well. Rick was most recently the chairman of Dollar General, an increasingly popular retail channel that is also of increasing importance to our company. Prior to this most recent role, he was the chairman of the Duane Reade chain of pharmacy and convenience stores, and prior to that, the executive vice president and chief operating officer of Long's Drug Stores. He also serves on the boards of Lowe's Companies, Inc., Aramark, and Polte Group. We're already benefiting from Rick's tremendous experience in a variety of retail environments that are critically important to our business. Please join me in welcoming Rick to Kellogg's. Also, while we're sort of recognizing some people who have made great contributions to the company over the years, if there are any retired officers in our group today, could you please stand? Any retired officers? It's nicer in Florida this time of year, I guess. There we go. Thank you very much. Thank you for your service and continued support of our company. So before we move on to the business of our meeting, I'd also like to speak briefly about our chief financial officer. Last spring, when Ron Dissinger announced his retirement, he gave us plenty of time to conduct a thorough search for his successor. And while he has stepped down as CFO, Ron agreed to remain with Kellogg through 2017 to help ensure a successful transition. I take this moment to thank Ron for his dedicated 30 years of service to the Kellogg Company, and we'll all miss working with him. Thanks, Ron. Fareed Khan was named our next Chief Financial Officer, effective mid-February of this year. Fareed previously was the CFO of food service distributor US Foods. He is a proven business leader, having served in a variety of finance, commercial, and operations roles. We're excited about Fareed joining our company and confident he, like Ron, will play a critical role helping us achieve our business objectives. Welcome to the company, Fareed. Also, I'd like to take this opportunity to thank my global leadership team. We have had a number of area presidents with us here in Battle Creek this week from around the world. So a quick round of applause for the leadership team and everything they do for our company. We'd also like to recognize and pay tribute to some very special members of our Kellogg family, those who are currently serving our country in the military. We thank you for your incredible service and hope for a safe and quick return home to your loved ones. We'd also like to thank all the veterans who are with us today. Your courage and dedication are an inspiration to us all. Please join me in a round of applause for all our employees in the armed forces, those on active duty, those in the reserves, and our veterans. Now, would the secretary please report on the mailing of the annual report, notice of meeting, and proxy statement, and advise whether the necessary quorum to conduct the business of the meeting is present.
Mr. Chairman, beginning on or about March 8, 2017, copies of the annual report on Form 10-K, notice of the annual meeting, and proxy statement were mailed to each holder of record of common stock at the close of business on the record date for the meeting, March 1, 2017, which is in accordance with the bylaws of the company. We have received an affidavit attesting to this mailing. A list of share owners as of the record date has been duly certified by our transfer agent. That list has been open for inspection by the share owners at the company's headquarters for the past 10 days and is available at the meeting for examination by any share owner. In addition, I have been advised by the independent judge of election that there are present at today's meeting, in person or by proxy, holders of approximately 312 million shares of common stock representing approximately 89% of the shares of stock outstanding and entitled to vote. Since a majority of the company's shares are represented here today, a quorum is present, the meeting is duly constituted, and the business of the meeting may proceed.
Thank you, Gary. The report of the secretary on the existence of a quorum is accepted. I direct that the affidavit of mailing is to be made part of the minutes of the meeting. On behalf of the board of directors, we'd like to express our appreciation to all our show owners who returned their proxies. If there is a Sharoner present who is not and who desires to have a proxy recorded, please hand it to one of the ushers. If you have already voted by proxy, you do not need to take any further action. If you wish to vote in person, please obtain a ballot from the ushers at the time of the vote later in the meeting. The first order of business to come before us is the election of directors. The four nominees for re-election to the board for a three-year term expiring at the 2019 annual meeting are Stephanie Burns, Rick Dreiling, Lejeune Montgomery Tabron, and myself. Information concerning the nominees' experiences and qualifications is in the proxy statement. The company's bylaws require that a share owner provide advance notice to the company of a share owner's intent to nominate persons as directors. No such notice was received. Therefore, I declare the nomination for directors closed. The next order of business is the advisory resolution to approve executive compensation. At this time, I'd like to ask Gary to present the proposal.
The Board of Directors has recommended that the Sharoners vote for the resolution approving the compensation of our named executive officers as disclosed in the proxy statement.
Is there any discussion with respect to this proposal? As there's no discussion, we will move on. The next order of business is an advisory vote on the frequency of an advisory vote on executive compensation. At this time, I'd like to ask Gary to present the proposal.
The Board of Directors has recommended that the Sharoners vote for the option of 1 year as the frequency with which Sharoners are provided an advisory vote on executive compensation as disclosed in the proxy statement.
Is there any discussion with respect to this proposal? As there's no discussion, we will move on. The next order of business is the proposal to ratify the appointment of an independent registered public accounting firm for fiscal year 2017. At this time, I'd like to ask Gary to present the proposal.
The Audit Committee of the Board of Directors has appointed and recommends that the Sharoners ratify PricewaterhouseCoopers LLP as the company's independent registered public accounting firm for fiscal year 2017.
Is there any discussion with respect to this proposal? As there's no discussion, we will move on. The next order of business is the proposal to approve the Kellogg Company 2017 Long-Term Incentive Plan. At this time, I'd like to ask Gary to present the proposal.
The Board of Directors has recommended that the Sharoners vote for the Kellogg Company 2017 Long-Term Incentive Plan as disclosed in the company's proxy statement.
Is there any discussion with respect to this proposal? As there's no discussion, we'll move on. The next order of business is a shareowner proposal to amend the proxy access bylaw. I understand that John Love is here to present the proposal. Mr. Love?
Thank you. What is involved here is the shareholder access to nominate directors on the proxy. Everybody gets a proxy statement in the mail. If directors are nominated in compliance with this procedure, their names and their X's or ballot position would be on the ballot. And you have some qualifying rules that really make it impossible for this to take effect. And what this proposal would do would be to modify those rules. And one of them, of course, isn't really relevant to that aspect of it, but it's to change the number of directors that can be nominated from 20% to 25%. So that's not enough to really change the direction of the company. It's just to put some other viewpoints that are available to the directors and for their consideration and involvement. The ones that are of merit, though, is that you currently have a limitation on the number of stockholders that can combine to vote to have this process start, and it's 3%. So if 3% of the directors of the voters of the shareholders make a proposal, then it would be on the ballot. But then there's another provision that says only 20 people or 20 groups can accumulate this number to reach the 3%. Well, if there's 21 people that have enough shares but you only count 20, then you're out of luck. So it should be whatever amount of people can get together to reach the 3% threshold, that's the proper way to do it, not to put this additional requirement on it that only 20 groups can get together to do it. And the last part that, so we'd like to eliminate that. The last part is kind of not quite the American way. It says if the directors that are somehow get through this system are on the ballot and they lose the election, they can't run again. So that isn't fair either, because if you lose an election, you should be able to come back next year and maybe people would like it even more. So that those things should be modified, and that's what is at issue with this proposal. So thank you. And you know, who knows, one of the things, of course, is the Kellogg Foundation owns enough stock, so it doesn't really make much difference. But anyway, that should be modified. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Love, and thank you for being here again this year. The board's statement of opposition to this proposal is included in the proxy statement. The board has carefully considered the proposal, and we believe that the retention of the current form of proxy access remains the long-term best interest of Kellogg and all its share owners. Is there any further discussion relating to the share owners' proposal? Because there's no further business scheduled to come before the share owners, I declare the polls for voting on each matter before this meeting are now open and direct that a vote of the share owners be taken by written ballot. Please remember, if you have returned your proxy, whether by mail, telephone, internet, or to our ushers earlier in the meeting, your vote has already been recorded. If there is anyone who wishes to vote in person, please raise your hand so you may receive a ballot. There's one down here in the middle. Please keep your hand up so that they can find you. Anybody else? Okay. I suggest that those shown as voting in person mark their ballots and pass them to the ends of the aisles so they may be picked up by the ushers. The polls for voting on these matters will remain open for 5 minutes and will then be closed. After voting has been completed on all matters on the agenda, the ballots will be tabulated by the proxy judge. Ushers will be available in the aisles to pick up your ballots. While the votes are counted, I want to provide you the following update on our business, after which you will have an opportunity to ask questions. Okay, so please, before I get started, take a moment to review the forward-looking statements. If you have more questions, please visit our website, look at our various SEC filings, more information on the risks that the company faces as we operate in what's a very difficult and changing environment. Really, three things I want to cover today. The first is our strategy as a company. We're going through significant change in the food industry, so how are we navigating that change? The second is how we're doing that in a way that is consistent with the values of Mr. Kellogg, and talk about the heart and soul of our company. And then finally have time for question and answers at the end. So please think about your questions. We'll have time at the end to answer any questions you may have. Before I start talking about the strategy of the company, it's worth reflecting on the changes going on in the food industry today. Consumers are changing their definition of health and wellness. If you go back over time, health and wellness was defined as low fat, low calorie, defined as added vitamins, fortification, et cetera. Now, increasingly, health and wellness means the absence of negatives. It could be GMO-free, could be gluten-free, any number of definitions along those lines. Simple foods. To address this, the company is going through the largest renovation program in its history as we aggressively change our foods to ensure they are on trend with long-term needs of our consumers. Also, how consumers consume media is changing. So we're going from an era where people spent most of their time in front of the TV to be much more social, mobile, digital in terms of how they get their information. We've been through this before as a company. We've gone from print to radio, from radio to TV, and now from TV to social, mobile, digital. But it is a fundamental change in how we build brands and how we communicate to our consumers. And a third big change that's coming through our industry is e-commerce. And it's still early days on e-commerce in the US. Around 2% of US food sales go through e-commerce. Compare that to the UK, where over 10% of our sales go through e-commerce, or our business in China, where well over 20% of our sales go through e-commerce. E-commerce will have a fundamental and substantial impact on the food industry over the next decade. So a significant amount of change going on in our industry. We've created a strategy that enables us to take advantage of those changes and turn them into opportunities for our business as opposed to risks. So let me take you through our strategy, our 2020 growth strategy. It has four pillars. The first is win in breakfast. The second is to be a global snacking powerhouse. The third is to double the size of our emerging markets business. And the fourth is to win where shoppers shop. This will help us continue to transform our company. And to put that transformation into context, it's worth reflecting how much our company has changed over the last 15 years. 15 years ago, we were about a $6 billion business. We had 70% of our sales in cereal and 20% of our sales in what we called portable foods, essentially cereal bars, cereal on the go. The remaining 10% was in frozen foods. Today, we're more than twice that size. We remain the largest cereal company. We're about 41% of our sales are in cereal, but just over 50% now of our sales are in snacks, and the remaining around 8% is in frozen foods. So today, we're still the largest cereal company in the world. We're also the second largest cookie cracker company in the world, and the second largest savory snack company in the world. This is enabling us to drive our business even stronger as we go forward and provide an even greater position around the world from an emerging market perspective. So this transformation will continue as we go forward. Let me start by talking about cereal. Think about this business in two parts, our core four cereal businesses and then the emerging markets. Our core four are the US, UK, Australia, and Canada. Quite frankly, these are some of the markets we've seen the biggest change in the definition of health and wellness. So we've had a pretty tough time in these markets over the last 3 or 4 years. I'm happy to say that three of those markets have largely stabilized, US, Canada, and Australia. The UK is lagging a little bit behind due to both the impact of Brexit and some unique issues with the retail dynamic in the UK and our own portfolio in the UK. But I'm happy to say the playbook that has worked in Canada, Australia, and the US will work in the UK, and we will stabilize and improve the performance of that business over time. Outside the core four, cereal remains a good, strong growth business for us in the emerging markets, despite issues like demonetization in India or disruption in markets like Brazil. We continue to do well in our emerging market cereal business. But I come back to the core four cereal markets. I'm confident we can return this business to growth over time as well. If you look back across the 2000s, we grew our U.S. cereal business 3 to 4% a year. What drove that was Special K and Cashew. What could drive our business over the next decade? Well, if you look at the percentage of cereal consumed outside breakfast today in the United States, it's over 30%, up from just 20% a decade ago. So we're seeing increasing snacking on cereal outside the breakfast occasion. Millennials eating it in the evening, kids eating it after school as an after-school snack. As we see increasing snacking in the U.S. diet, we believe cereal can provide a better solution for healthier in-home snacking opportunities. So we're excited about the potential growth that cereal can have in our business as we go forward. As we have consumers reappraise the category and reappraise how they think about cereal as a great snack throughout the day, we need to bring different marketing programs and bring different opportunities to excite the consumer. One example is our cereal cafe in New York. And I have a short video here to take you through our New York cereal cafe.
It's New York City's latest trendy restaurant in the heart of Times Square. And if you really want something special, Special K that is, this is the place to go.
I had the Crispix corn pops.
Fruit Loops. I love cereal.
Yes, cereal. And the company running this cafe? Who else but Kellogg's?
Kellogg's Sugar Frosted Flakes. And
teaming up this time not with Tony the Tiger, but superstar dessert chef Christina Tosi.
For me, it's about taking like the everyday ordinary and twisting it just a little bit.
Her job at the Kellogg's Cafe, to add a twist to those bowls of cereal.
You gotta try the blueberry jam in that, it's fabulous.
So when someone suggests adding pistachios to your frosted flakes, Rice Krispies with matcha, maybe it won't sound so crazy after all.
So you can see that versatility is a big idea. Versatility in how you eat your cereal and versatility on when you eat your cereal throughout the day. That New York City cafe, we have similar cafes in Sydney, we have cafes in Korea, and we're looking for other opportunities around the world. Another example of how we're doing things differently is Bare Naked. So up here you can see the Bare Naked canister. You can go online to barenaked.com. You can order your own individualized granola mix. You go in and use Chef Watson from IBM Watson, and from 50 plus ingredients, create your own unique blend and have it shipped to your home. A great opportunity for us to learn as a company about personal nutrition or personalization of food, as well as e-commerce, both of which will be big growth drivers of the business going forward, even though it's a relatively small business today. And then with so much going on in the food industry, not everything can be done within the four walls of the Kellogg Company. So we've started our own internal private equity fund, our venture capital fund, to invest in new startups and to help those new startups succeed and to increase the innovation in the business, not just within the company, but around the company. But even as all these things are changing, some things remain the same. And one of the great brands that's having a tremendous year this year is Frosted Flakes, which is celebrating its 65th birthday. And it grew mid-single digits last year, and it continues to grow this year behind great innovation, which I'm hoping you've all tried, but if you haven't, please go out and buy Cinnamon Frosted Flakes. It's a great innovation in the cereal category this year. So 65 years of growth and continued to grow in 2016 and 2017. And we have a quick video here on some of the work going on in Frosted Flakes.
Park today?
Maybe.
You can make it great.
Yeah. Kellogg's Frosted Flakes gives you the sweet spark to go all in and let your grade out.
They're great!
We remain confident and excited about the potential of cereal and the opportunities long-term in this category. But the other area of transformational change in the company has been our global snacking powerhouse. This has really transformed the company over the last 15 years, and it's continued over the last 5 years. If we start in North America, you'll recognize all these great brands, Keebler, Cheez-It, Pringles, Rice Krispie Treats, Special K, Nutri-Grain Bars, quite a wide range of snacking options in here. And some fantastic brands, and just two as an example. One is Rice Krispie Treats. It's grown about 8% a year over the last 4 years. We think it has tremendous runway, tremendous potential, and is continuing to grow today behind another great campaign. If we could quickly run the Rice Krispie Treats ad, please.
Okay, old man, I get what's going on here. You love Rice Krispie Treats. The crunch, the chewiness, the sweet and salty goodness, yet you gave it to me. Maybe you don't know any other way to tell your son you love him. Maybe your dad was never able to show you how.
What are you staring at?
Say no more. You're my rock.
Ooey, chewy, snap, crackle, bubbly.
Just a fun treat, a great addition for school lunches, a great addition for soccer games, everything else. Another big opportunity for us is Cheez-It, a $1 billion business here in the U.S., 20 years of consecutive growth, leaning into the savory snack category, a tremendous business, one that we think has incredible potential to continue to grow, four-year CAGR around 6%. So we have a strong U.S. snacks business. We are going through a pretty big change in our U.S. snacks business as we move from a DSD system to a warehouse system. This will enable us to take more resources, put behind these brands, and drive additional growth in the future. Moving to look at our international business, there's been tremendous change in our international business. You go back to 2011, 2012, when we acquired Pringles. Pringles has really transformed this business. Pringles gave us dedicated teams in Europe, in Latin America and Asia Pacific, and has driven Pringles and our wholesome snacks business have driven 8% volume growth between 2012 and 2016. That's taking out the impact of foreign exchange, just pure volume growth. Obviously, some investments in Egypt in there has helped as well over this time period. But it has been a transformational acquisition. Pringles tripled the size of international snacks business, and in some markets, like Southeast Asia, even tripled the size of the company. Which takes me to the third pillar, which is emerging markets. Emerging markets is the defining event in the food industry in our lifetimes. The increasing size of the middle class around the world provides great opportunities for a company like Kellogg. Back in 2015, we set ourselves a very ambitious goal. We said we wanted to double the size of our emerging market business by 2020. Let's put that into context. It took us over 100 years to build the emerging market business we had. We said we want to double it in just the next 5 years. We're actually making good progress against that goal. If you compare the amount of volume that we sold in the emerging markets in 2013 and compare that to what we're going to sell in 2017, we'll sell around 70 to 80% more volume in the emerging markets in 2017 than we did back in 2013. What's driving that is some underlying growth within the business, but also our joint venture investment in Nigeria. We've made the largest investment of any food company in Africa. Our acquisition of Parati in Brazil, and the investment in Egypt. In Egypt, we acquired the largest cookie cracker company in Egypt, as well as a good-sized cereal business there. If you look at the impact these businesses can have, look at Parati. Parati tripled the size of our Brazilian business. Gives us a whole new source of go-to-market because Parati goes to small mom-and-pop stores, whereas Kellogg has historically gone to big grocery stores. So between the two businesses, we're able to take advantage of each other's strengths. Classic case of 1 + 1 = 3. So we're excited about our emerging markets opportunity and the progress that the company continues to make in this space. The fourth pillar is win where the shopper shops. And this is really an enabler for the first three, but it's so important to our company, we pulled it out to focus on as its own individual pillar. Two parts here. First, as you become a snacks company, you need to be within arm's reach of desire. And so we need to be in high-frequency stores. We need to be in mom-and-pop stores. We need to be in the local convenience store, whereas historically, the Kellogg Company has been more focused on center store grocery. So we're increasing our capabilities in those areas, particularly in Latin America, Asia Pacific, but even here in the U.S. in the convenience channel. And then the other big thing we're doing is preparing ourselves for e-commerce. This change is still early in the U.S., but it will be fundamental as it changes how shoppers shop for our foods. And so here we're doing things like the Bare Naked example I gave you before, but also ensuring that we are a leader around the world in thinking about how we're going to go to market in this space. So that's our 2020 growth strategy. At the same time as we have all these changes going on in our industry, there's also recognition that these large food companies have the potential to earn more operating margin. And so we do have a goal of increasing operating margin from 2015 to 2018 by over 300 basis points. Even as we do this, we're doing it in the right way. So we're investing back in our foods. That's actually a headwind towards margin expansion. So investing in our foods even as we're trying to improve our operating margin. We're also ensuring our brand building is giving us the return on our investment that we need so that we are evolving our model from maybe a TV-centric model to much more social, mobile, digital. As we do all this, we're driving unprecedented productivity programs such as the largest restructuring in the company's history, as well as zero-based budgeting to ensure we're making all the right decisions and getting the biggest bang for the buck that we can. All of this is reflected in our share price. You look at our share price over a three-year period ending end of 2016. We outperformed the S&P 500, but quite frankly, we underperformed the food index a little bit, so an opportunity for us to do better as we go forward. We also recognize that the dividend is an important part of holding Kellogg shares, and so today the board of directors announced a June dividend of 52 cents a share and the intent to increase the dividend in September to 54 cents a share, providing a 2017 dividend around $2.12. We also recognize, though, there's a lot more to the Kellogg Company than just our financial results. This is a company with a heart and a soul. This is a company that has the spirit and beliefs of its founder and has a true north. So how are we navigating this change and being true to those key values? We recognize the biggest impact we can have in the world around us is through our food, ensuring that our food is better for our consumers, again, why we're going through the large renovation program. Hunger, getting our food to people who need it the most, when and where they need it, whether they can afford it or not, a big opportunity for us. Sustainability, working on the entire farm-to-family supply chain to have the smallest possible impact on the environment, and then living the values of our founder. I have a, we just announced a new program, 3 Billion Better Days by 2025, which addresses a lot of those elements. I have a video here. Let's run the video to bring this to life.
Kellogg has always believed that a better start leads to a better day. That's how it all began more than a century ago, with a simple flake. And we still believe in the power of breakfast today. In 2013, we started Breakfast for Better Days to help feed as many people as possible all over the world, with a special focus on helping hungry children start their school day with a full stomach, ready to learn. We've already surpassed our original goals. But there's more work to do and more people we can reach. That's why we're committing to creating 3 billion more better days for people around the world. Imagine that, 3 billion better days. For our neighbors, our friends, our family, our children. First, we're setting even higher goals around food donations. And in countries where food banks don't currently exist, we're helping to create them. We'll also continue expanding our breakfast programs into schools and classrooms because we already know it's making a difference. Address food security, we must also feed potential through sustainable agriculture. And so, we're working with farmers to help improve their quality of life and help them produce more food while using fewer natural resources. Our employees are lending their hands to provide better days. And we're asking for your help, too. We believe in the impact our commitments can provide because nourishing families so they can flourish and thrive is our purpose. It is what we do and why we do it. But we also know we can have an even more powerful impact working in partnership with others. Together, we can do even more to fight hunger and feed potential for generations to come.
So let's talk a little bit more about sustainability. We are committed to looking after the entire end-to-end supply chain, all the way from the farm to the family. This includes working back on the farm with the goal of working with about 500,000 farmers to implement climate-smart agricultural practices. This will help them both reduce the impact on the farm, as well as improve the resilience of their crops, improve their yields over time. Today, we're about 280,000 farmers in, so making good progress against this program and being recognized by a number of NGOs for our actions in this critically important area. We also have a commitment to create an environment within the Kellogg Company where everyone can bring their best every day, when everyone can feel that they can completely contribute. Diversity and inclusion is absolutely essential in this work, and we're very happy to be recognized by companies like Diversity Inc. in their top 50 companies in the US for diversity and inclusion for the last few years, as well as various other organizations. So we look at the whole reputational work of the company. It's very positive to be honored by Fortune, Forbes, Ethisphere, as one of the most admired, most reputable companies, most ethical companies in the world. and again continuing the spirit of the founder, Mr. Kellogg. And our commute also occurs here in Battle Creek. We are one of the largest contributors to United Way in this community. Our employees give thousands of days of volunteer work to local schools, etc. And we're actively involved in programs like BC Vision to make a difference in this community. So I think you can see, as a company, there's a lot of change going on in our industry. We're taking proactive steps to make sure those changes are opportunities for our company, and we're doing it in a way that is consistent with the values of our founder and recognizing the true north of our company. So with that, I'd like to open to Q&A. If we have any questions, please make your way to one of the microphones in the corridors. Happy to take a question on any topic. Have one here. Sorry.
Good afternoon, everyone. Good afternoon. My name is Mary Carmen Munoz, and I'm here representing Sierra Metro, Detroit, and LASED, Latin Americans for Social and Economic Development. I'm here to thank the Kellogg Company for the support that you give the Latino community in Southwest Detroit and in Southeastern Michigan. I personally can say that you've touched the lives of many, many children in our community by providing breakfast and nutritious lunches during the time when school is out and normal. Many of our children receive school-funded food programs or lunch assistance, so it's not there when school is not in session. So we personally would like to thank the Kellogg Corporation for everything that you do. Muchas gracias. We truly appreciate your embracing diversity through the support of our community as well as with how it's reflected within your corporation. Muchas gracias. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Appreciate that. You know, there's nothing more powerful as an employee than going to one of these breakfast clubs around the country, or as Chris Hood would say, around Europe, and sitting down with these kids and being part of that opportunity. It's wonderful. It's one of the great things about being a food company is food comes to life. You know, people's eyes light up. It's a wonderful opportunity to see how our consumers engage with our food. Thank you very much for your comments. Any other questions, comments? Please, John.
I could ask a couple here. One, I was just wondering how much imports we get from Mexico into the United States from the factories that you have down there. And the other one is, in Detroit, the Tigers have an obligation to give 50,000 tickets to the children of low-income families. And I was wondering if there's some way to tie in Tony the Tiger to maybe give each one of those children a snack. And these are kids that are on school lunch programs that are paid for.
Yeah.
So those are two things that...
That's a great idea. Thank you. We'll take away the Detroit Tigers idea. It's a great idea. So we'll see if there's something we can do there. On the question of how much we import from the U.S. in the way of food, we are actually a net exporter of food from the United States. We make more finished food in the United States than we ship around the world than we import into the United States. There is some transfer of food between markets, so we make, you know, a lot of food here in the U.S. We take up to Canada. We have one plant in Canada that makes for Canada and takes a bit of food back here. We make food in the U.S. we send out to Mexico. We have a little bit of food coming from Mexico into the U.S. But again, the vast majority of our food is locally made. So all of our cookies and crackers are made here in the U.S. Our Eggo waffles are all made in the U.S. Pop-Tarts are all made in the U.S. And the vast majority of our cereals made here in the U.S. So we are very much a local manufacturer and producer of food. Again, a net exporter of finished food from the U.S.
Thanks. I'm Marilyn Miles, and I'm a lifelong resident of Battle Creek. And Kellogg's has provided jobs for two immediate members of my family and helped me get through college. But one of the things you stated today, you say that we're creating a bigger middle class in emerging markets. And I'm wondering about the middle class here in the United States, because you have consistently right-sized jobs in the U.S., especially in Battle Creek, and it impacts. And perhaps we wouldn't need to contribute more and more to United Way and have a food bank that's growing every year if we had a bigger middle class?
Great question. I mean, the middle class in the U.S. is under pressure. There is increasing polarization of income in the U.S. That's a very big society issue. That's more than just a Kellogg Company discussion. What I will say on Kellogg and our role in Battle Creek, back in 2013, before we started our large restructuring program, we said that we made a commitment to keep roughly the same number of employees here in Battle Creek in 2017 as we had in 2013. We're basically still in line with that commitment. So we still have a very similar employment base here today as we did 4 years ago. But your bigger comment on middle class, I mean, as a food company, we like to see broad income distribution, not extreme polarization of income. Any other questions, comments? Great. Well, thank you very much. So, Gary, are we ready to report the results of the vote?
Mr. Chairman, the independent judge of election has tabulated the vote and reports that all four nominees have been re-elected directors to serve a 3-year term, expiring at the company's annual meeting in 2020, each having received at least approximately 97% of the shares voted. Proposal 2, the advisory resolution to approve executive compensation, was approved by approximately 97% of the shares present and entitled to vote. Proposal 3, the advisory vote for the option of 1 year as the frequency of holding an advisory vote on executive compensation was approved by 93% of the shares present and entitled to vote. Proposal 4, the appointment of PricewaterhouseCoopers as the company's independent registered public accounting firm for 2017 was ratified by approximately 98% of the shares present and entitled to vote. Proposal 5, the resolution to approve the Kellogg Company 2017 long-term incentive plan was approved by approximately 94% of the shares present and entitled to vote. Proposal 6, consistent with the board's recommendation, the Shearner proposal concerning proxy access was defeated as approximately 18% of the shares present and entitled to vote voted in favor of the proposal. The independent judge of election will furnish a written report of the final vote count with respect to the matters voted on today, which shall be included in the minutes of the meeting.
On the basis of the vote of the shareholders of the company, I declare that all four nominees for director are re-elected. The executive compensation vote was approved. Proposal 3 was approved for a 1-year frequency. The independent auditors are ratified. The Kellogg Company 2017 long-term incentive plan has been approved. And the shareholder proposal to amend the proxy access bylaw was defeated. We'd like to express our sincere appreciation to the shareholders who attended today's meeting, as well as those who submitted their proxies but were unable to attend. Now, as there is no other business, this concludes the 95th Annual Kellogg Company Shareholders Meeting. The meeting is adjourned. Thank you very much.